somehow that she will strike. Bring them back. Bring them all back.
Scarveth had taken one of many paths to Obsidia. There were as many roads to the city as there were roads to Loss. Neferata had closed her realm's primary gate on the border after Hothalas had sealed Obsidia. She opened all the gates now, and her legions entered the darkness that would take them to the Sighing City, the tunnels of Loss filled with the tremendous army of the dead. Walking beside Nagadron, Neferata arrived at the gate of Obsidia. The anvils of the Heldenhammer marched at the front with her. Rasan had demanded they take the lead, and Neferata had agreed. She was pleased to let them. They should see what was coming first. The more they trusted her, the better. Neferata's fanfare sounded, its strains a celebration of the delights of blood. There was no mourning for Neferata. Death was a revel. Anguish was what she brought to others. Solemn drums answered the blast of trumpets. Hothalas' march was stately and spiked with the sharp stabs of pipers. It was a counterpoint to the fanfare, though it was not in opposition. Anguish was ready to march with blood. The gates did not open yet. Neferata smiled at Hothalas' caution. "Your ally is not eager to let you in," Rasan said. "She awaits the accomplishment of a promise," Neferata said, "as she should." On the top of the gate, the company of spirits parted to make way for their queen. The great wraith appeared, scepter in hand. She looked down at the host gathered at her wall and was silent. "I salute you, Queen Hothalas," Neferata called. "I have come as was agreed."
"I can see that you have come," said Hothalas. "But I was promised that the crown would be made whole.
I was promised a victory."
"Both shall come to pass. They are as necessary to my ends as they are to your soul. Is my emissary with you?"
"He is. I gave him my half of the crown, which he no longer has. He says it is with the other half."
"So it is." Neferata gestured to her right. Merineth left her place in the shadows behind her queen to fly upwards, hovering halfway up the height of the wall. "I was in Velkin," she said. "I took your sister's portion of the crown."
"Then where is it?"
Hothalas asked. "It is providing you with your victory," said Neferata.
"It has not been reforged. I would know it."
"So will Kranjax." Hothalas fell silent. "I believe she is sifting through implications," Neferata said quietly to Rasan.
"What implications?"
"The Queen of Velkin is mad. Her reaction will not be rational when the Sundered is made whole and is not in her possession." Neferata turned back to Hothalas. "Do you see?" she called. "Do you see the double victory that lies ahead?"
"Perhaps,"
said Hothalas. "I do not ask that you trust me. You do not have to. You will know for yourself when my promises are kept. Look towards Velkin, Hothalas of Obsidia. Look to Mausolea. You will see, and when you do, you will open the gates gladly, and we will march together." The ring of scorched earth surrounding Mausolea was several hundred yards wide. The four spies approached it from the west. They stopped on a plain of singing grass. The blades writhed, and where once they had whistled in sorrow, now they sang in anger. They were the echoes of the spirits that had sunk into the land. At the edge of the ring, the blades screamed, rehearsing the memory of fire. The sentinel of the shroud's beam had passed a short time before. Velazza and her comrades had just under an hour before it came again. Time to make ready. For everything. The land on which the fire passed had been scorched and melted repeatedly until it was blackened glass. The heat was still blistering. A shower of liquid brass pattered against the ground.
"No army will cross this without loss,"
said Ebikente.
"Especially a large one."
"If the army is large enough, the losses will not matter," Velazza said.
"If victory is attained, then no loss will matter," said Gesa.
Velazza exchanged a long look with her friend. She clasped Gesa's upper arm.
"We have always been ready."
"Yes, we have," said Gesa.
The other two nodded.
"Then let us begin."
They stood in a circle, their hands linked. Merineth had trained them thoroughly in the collective spell they were about to cast. There had been no reason to use it before. Now it seemed obvious that their mission was always going to bring them to this moment and this very specific need.
"Our queen always knew that things would come to this pass, didn't she?" said Tavencia. "This was her plan from the start."
"Yes," said Velazza. "I think so. Would you have preferred to know?"
Tavencia thought for a moment.
"No,"
she decided.
"Better not to know my fate, even if it is preordained. Especially if it is preordained."
"I have freely chosen to be here," said Gesa. "This is what I believe. It is simply that our queen always knew that I would make this choice."
"And I choose to be proud of what we will accomplish this night," said Velazza.
They began to chant. They drew upon eldritch forces. The unity of their voices summoned a greater strength than they could have individually, and bound it with unbreakable shackles. The power gathered around them, closed around them, became an invisible shell around them. They created a shield no spear or spell could pierce. It would have to withstand much more than that. Velazza's skin went numb. She knew she held Gesa's and Epikente's hands, but she could not feel them. She could hear the wind blowing softly through the singing grass, but she could not feel that any longer either. She was glad she had touched Gesa's arm earlier. She was glad they had all been holding hands before the numbness descended. They were ready. Velazza pulled the sundered crown out of the leather bag at her hip, and the spies walked the rest of the way to the blasted earth. Velazza discovered her skin was not completely numb. The radiant heat got through, though she felt it merely as a slight warmth. She knew that would change. She was ready. They stepped onto the black glass. It cracked beneath them. Smoke rose from the soles of their boots. The land grew hotter and the light of Graunos swept towards them. It was still a thin line in the distance, scorching a region of the ring well to the east. Velazza presented the two halves of the crown to the others. They formed another circle around it, the four of them pressing it together. Then they waited for the fire to arrive. Velazza was facing east. She watched the beam approach. Impassive and terrible, the sentinel of the shroud was turning its face to her. It cut through the night, the rawest of wounds, blood-red fire drawing ever closer. Her discipline gave her the self-control she needed to suppress the instinct to flee. No thinking being, alive or dead, would deliberately subject itself to this monstrous cremator. Not unless the highest of duties called, or the greatest of wills commanded. The beam was wide now. It hurt her eyes to stare at it. The heat of the land grew more and more intense. The glass was already beginning to run again. Velazza's boot heels was sinking into the surface. Summoned by the cornate nature of the beam, a rain of brass began. It beat against Velazza's head. It trickled down her face and from her shoulders. The spell of protection held, and the metal rolled off her, leaving the trace of a burn on flesh, a hint of a char on clothing. There was no pain. That was yet to come. The pain was very close. The pain arrived. The light of Graunos fell upon Neferata's spies, a splinter from the heart of Haish itself, and transmuted by the hate of its vengeful sun. Light, more brilliant than any Velazza had ever seen, engulfed her. She closed her eyes against it, but there was no darkness to be found, no succour of shadow. Illumination was destruction. The glass became a boiling river. Velazza sank into it up to her calves. The air burned. The river of glass burned. Everything burned. Flames ignited on the clothing of the spies. The heat and the light and the pain broke through the shield. Velazza had believed that once agony reached a certain level, it attained a kind of purity, a transcendence of sensation taken beyond the limits. There was no purity here. This was the agony of hate and rage. For the thing that consumed her now, no pain was enough. No torment was equal to its wrath. As soon as the beam fell on the spies, their protection began to break down and their destruction was inevitable. Inside the monstrous light, a second light blazed, created by the first and even more intense. The sundered halves of the crown became a searing diamond, a shining white beyond silver. The sharp point of the light seized Velazza's attention, momentarily stealing it away from her torment. The two halves of the crown were conducting the heat to each other, reaching to one another, seeking to become a single whole once more. Seeking, reaching, but not complete, not yet, not while the blaze shone brighter and brighter.
Move, Velazza thought.
The effort to remain focused on the task was the greatest of her existence. The light of Graunos must not leave them before the task was complete. They could not keep up with its movement. But even the fraction of an eye blink more might be enough. It would have to be. She shuffled backwards in the direction of the beam's sweep. Her sisters moved with her. She could no longer see them. There was only the light of blood and the light of the crown. She knew she was moving and that she was still holding the crown. She knew she could do no more. She was doing as her queen commanded, and that was her strength and her anchor in the sea of pain. She took only a few steps before she fell. She lost her grip on the crown. She dropped into the boiling, flaming glass, and the spell of protection crumbled away. She was finished. They all were. And so was their task. In the midst of the conflagration, the crown cooled all at once. The blinding white contracted, absorbed into a dark silhouette of iron. Black in the screaming red was Velazza's final sight. Her last thought was of her queen's laughter at what was coming for Graunos. Through to the end of her pain, Velazza laughed too. Graunos circled the offertory throne room as the rotation of the sentinel of the shroud brought Skuldagger Bastion around to face Neferatia again. He paused at each window, stopping longest each time he looked west. Neferata's attack was coming, he was sure of that. It was coming and he would meet it with fury. What he did not know was where the assault would come from. He could assume nothing. He had been deceived this far. His one certainty was that one place from which no attack would come was the Western Stonepane Mountains. He was fortunate, and the fact that he had averted disaster through luck enraged him. At least he had realized that the standoff at the mountain range was a decoy, while Neferata and the anvils of the Heldenhammer were still making their way back to the main body of her troops. He had acted soon enough to recall his forces. He was gathering them around Mausolea, From here, he would strike with brutal force at Neferata, no matter where she found a way into Angaria. Cathag was out there now, leading the largest of the warhordes back to the city. Several of Graunos's great hosts had already returned, and another massive wave of his legions was less than an hour out from Mausolea's gates. When Graunos looked west, he could see his warriors advancing over the low hills towards the city. They were darkness and fire, an ocean of violence drowning the land. They would bring a terrible illumination to Neferata. She would understand, as she was destroyed, that she no longer ruled the currents of blood in this region of Shaish. Graunos brought the light of wrath to burn away the shadows of her pointless schemes. As he watched, the revolutions of the Sentinel of the Shroud brought the light of his anger around to the west. It turned the night crimson where it passed. Graunos waited to see his armies, camped around the city and still approaching, cast their shadows in the glow of the beam's passage. Before he could look upon the glory of the strength that had conquered one empire and would soon destroy another, he saw a flash inside the beam. It came from the base, on the ring of scorched land, as if a new fire were bursting into violent life inside the first. Graunos stared, baffled. The blister of silver white shone only for a few instants. Then it winked out, and for the briefest of moments, Graunos thought he saw a black dot, the tiniest blemish in the perfection of his fire. The beam moved on. Graunos puzzled over what he had seen. Then a premonition of disaster made him look up. He saw nothing at first, only the solid roof of storm clouds, flashes of lightning revealing their turmoil. He kept looking, suddenly certain that despite his efforts he had been deceived again. The charade he had uncovered had been merely one veil concealing yet another. He had been lured to pointlessness. Now he had been manipulated into bringing his army to catastrophe. He saw movement in the clouds. It was heavy, vast, swift. Then the sky fell through the storm. The sundered crown became whole again, and it called triumphantly to the sisters. In Obsidia, Hothalas jerked, overcome with the simultaneity of completion and loss. The wraith sighed. The hiss of pain slithered across the city, forcing her subjects to their knees with the sting of a new, overwhelming loss that was not their own, yet was greater than any they had felt before. Outside Obsidia, Neferata watched the anvils of the Heldenhammer stir uneasily, though if they felt the loss, they hid it well. Neferata smiled at the sound of the Queen's pain. For her, it meant that the final act of the war was about to begin. In Velkin, Kranjax also knew that the crown was reforged. The knowledge was instinctual. The Banshee could no longer form anything close to coherent thought. She was a creature of passions. The passions veered first towards joy that the crown was whole, and then they became dark, because she did not have it. The crown had been stolen from her. The need to possess it again swamped every other instinct. Kranjax's broken consciousness reached out for the reforged crown. She must have it. She reached down to the plain below the Sentinel of the Shroud. Her monstrous, lunatic will seized at the spot where the crown had come to being again. It felt its contours and held fast. She did not let go of her islands in the sky. Whole once more, the crown of loss refused her. It would not be defined by one sister's embodiment of loss. It would not come to her. Her desire held it. In her need, she could not release it. The crown's reality made it a thing she could not possess. The raging, maddened will pulled, and it was pulling on all of Shaish. With no hint of reason and no understanding, Kranjax's howling need brought her realm low. Velkin plunged through the clouds. If its queen had been able to release anything at all, the disaster would not have been total. but all that she held was hers forever. For Cranyax, the anger of loss was as possessive as it was eternal. And so, trapped in the jealous web of the Queen's will, the rock platforms plummeted to the ground. The throne rock slammed into Mausolea just to the west of the Sentinel of the Shroud. Its edge glanced against the mountain, shaking it from roots to peak, cracking the walls of Skulldugger Bastion. The greater part of the city disappeared beneath the impact. The platform destroyed itself in the fall, and the Keep of the Howl came down 1 league from the Sentinel, over the spot where the crown had been made whole again. The volcanic cone shattered. The platform was demolished, and the sphere of the keep exploded into fragments, the spikes of its towers arcing over the ruins of the city. Millions of tons of rock sealed the crown away from the Banshee forever. In the midst of the cataclysm, in the exploding wreck of her castle and its island, Cranyax screamed. She was so close to the crown, yet blocked from it, and she had lost her realm. Her shriek went on and on and on, louder and more frenzied than any before. Mausolea fell, flattened by the fragments of the sky. The night came down, black shadows spreading over neighbourhoods and encampments. The people of the city looked up in terror and disbelief. They saw their end come, and some had time to scream for absent mercy before they were smashed to dust. Spirits rose from the crushed remains of 2 realms, howling in distress. The land for miles beyond Mausolea rocked and quaked as Velkin plunged and died. Dust rose from new craters and choked the air. Fireballs lit the obscurity. Lava poured from the wounded ground and from the shattered platforms. It ran over the devastation in flash floods, burning and consuming anything that still stood after the impacts. The sky fell over the armies of Graunos too. In the camps, inside the city and approaching through lands beyond, nowhere was safe from annihilation. Kathag saw the great fall begin, the clouds belching fire as Velkin roared through. He refused to run. There was no point. He would be destroyed by the rain of a city, or he would survive. There was no shelter. The shouts and fury of the horde he led were inaudible. The pounding thunder of the rock strikes was so huge it drowned out every other sound. Some of the bloodbound ran. Many raised their weapons in defiance against the sky that had come to kill them. And then they vanished, destroyed by the thousands, by the tens of thousands. Legions were snuffed out in an instant. As he waited for the next few seconds to decide his fate, Kathag thought, "She has done this too." The ground in Nulamia and the sky over Mausolea obeyed her commands. For the first time, he knew despair. Then he was engulfed in darkness and dust. The fires were fading, and the dust had begun to settle over a broken landscape, when the border between Obsidia and Angaria opened, and the legions of Neferata's creation poured into the wounded empire. To claim that destruction leads to creation is to perpetuate a half-truth. Destruction, properly understood, properly used, is the purest form of creation. It precedes and follows all other forms. Creation, in its narrow sense, is nothing but the suspended moment between the grandeur of destruction. Neferata, the Forges of Death. Chapter 14. The armies of Neferatia and Obsidia, and the anvils of the Heldenhammer, raced from the hidden gates to the ruined landscape. Scarveth rode again with his black knights. Sword drawn, he exulted in the charge. Everywhere he looked, he saw the shaping hand of his queen. He and Merineth had recovered the crown. Velazza, Gesa, Epicente, and Tevencia had reforged it. The cataclysm had been brought about by the actions of many hands, but only one counted. Only one had directed all the others. They had been the agents of her will, enacting her design and nothing more. What he bore witness to was the creation of the Mortark of Blood, and he gave her thanks that he was here, in this moment, to see what she had done and to strike at her enemies yet again. The sentinel of the shroud rose from a vista of destruction. Slabs of rock, like fragments of massive tombs, covered the land, leaning against each other, crushing the foundations of walls and buildings beneath them, and standing erect like monuments to the uncounted dead. The light of Graunos still blazed from Skulldagger Bastion, the mountain's slow turn bringing it inexorably around again. Scarveth urged his riders faster, to be the first to cross the Ring of Fire and fall upon the enemy. The war hordes of the Bloodbound had been smashed apart, but such was their number that many thousands of Khorne's worshippers still survived, and they were swarming over the ruins towards the Mortark's forces, their appetite for blood undiminished. He looked up. Neferata was in the air on Nagadron, in the lead of all, visible to every subject and foe, the author of this battle, directing the final act. Her forces below were too vast, and the ground too broken for them to advance in a narrow column. Instead, they came at the Sentinel of the Shroud on a front miles wide, a great tide of the dead washing over Mausolea. As Scarveth's cavalry raced past the anvils of the Heldenhammer, Rassan called out to him, "Is this what you have pledged yourself to? Neferata destroys the subjects she would rule." Scarveth laughed.
"She has not. She has bestowed a great gift upon them. They have the chance of being, like me, reborn into her service."
He rode on through the heaps of boulders and across the dark glass. He and his companions made for a large group of bloodbound survivors who were coming to meet them. Scarveth brought his sword slashing down as the two forces met. He sliced a bloodtaker's head in half and trampled the corpse. He kept up the speed of the charge, cutting bloody passage through the enemy. The bloodbound staggered, disorganized, rudderless. Scarveth urged his mount faster as he killed, trying to keep abreast of Nagadron. When he glanced up again, he saw something descending the slope of the sentinel. It burned with a crimson light, and a roar came to meet it from the scattered army below. An even greater howl came from the flame on the mountain. A voice as deep as war called for vengeance. Graunos raged down from the heights of Skulldagger Bastion. Wings spread wide, he hurtled through the air, a meteor of wrath. The air burned at his passage. Neferata had destroyed what he had created. She had laid waste to his armies, but in doing so, she had erred. She had stoked his fury to such a pitch that it would consume her utterly. She had lit the fires of her own pyre. He would destroy her here, and then he would roll through Neferatia to destroy her works. He would raise her empire. He would repay the destruction of Mausolea 1,000-fold.
"To me,"
he bellowed.
"The Skull Throne demands its tribute. Leave no foe standing."
His command shook the land. The Sentinel of the Shroud groaned in echo, and the clouds boiled as if, at his will, the sky might fall again. The Bloodbound obeyed. Purpose took hold of them, and the survivors of the devastation rushed to him. Some were already fighting Neferata's troops, but the others gathered at the base of the Sentinel, and they were a host that he would use well. They were strong in muscle and bone and hate. A single one of Graunos's champions would smash 100 skeletons without a thought. This war horde was a fist that would punch through the wall of the dead advancing on Mausolea. And the Sentinel was turning, bringing with it the light of annihilation. Much of Neferata's army was still crossing the Ring of Glass. If he held it back a bit longer, his revenge would be well begun. Graunos flew over the broken city, and his war horde followed. He clutched, Lightfall, the axe that had become his, upon his ascendance. It was a weapon forged for a hate born on Haish. The light that flashed from it was the illumination of lightning and crematoria. His silver eyes seared tracks of fire before him. He was light, and he was truth, and what they were was violence. Graunos turned south as he reached the front lines of the enemy. They were climbing over the monolithic remains of Velkin that had fallen in the region of the Ring of Glass. The debris slowed down the advance, and Graunos descended upon the open areas to savage the larger concentrations of the enemy. Neferata was in the distance, a tiny figure leading the attack on the survivors who were making a first stand, just at the edge of the Ring of Glass. Graunos made for her, destroying her legions as he did. He flew parallel to the advance. His axe severed the ethereal beings of the spirits. Its light burned them and shredded the lie of their undeath, sending them to final oblivion. Graunos angled his flight and cut deeper into the army of the dead. Its advance faltered, gaining time for the fist of his counter-attack to draw closer. Even closer was his most terrible light. The beam bore down on Neferata's legions, bringing the judgment of its creator's hate, incinerating vampires and skeletons by the hundreds, by the thousands. Graunos lifted into the air as the beam closed in. To the south and west of his position, he saw a large contingent of the Bloodbound crashing against the anvils of the Heldenhammer, fighting to hold them, too, in the path of destruction. Kathag was at the head of the attack.
"You did not crush enough of us, Mortag,"
Graunos thought.
"Not nearly enough."
The fire was upon them, as she had expected. Neferata had been curious to see if her forces could cross the ring before it came. Their failure did not disappoint her. She was prepared. There was even a reason to be glad of the failure. It created another opportunity. It also created a great risk, one that fell on her. The known risk was not to be despised. There was great pleasure to be found in it too. And so she grinned as she turned Nagadron back over the Ring of Glass and into the path of the beam. She had begun preparing for this moment at the beginning of the campaign, meditating over the descriptions her spies had provided of the light of Graunos and its effects. She had spent months in the claw of memory, considering the proper creation of the protection spell she would need. She had passed on enough of what she learned to Merineth to prepare Valatza and her sisters for their ultimate task. There were limits to the power they could summon, but it had been enough. What Neferata needed, though, was a spell greater in power and scope. It was not enough to keep four vampires intact long enough for them to complete their service to her. She had to save an army. She had begun muttering the incantation as soon as she had crossed through Obsidia's gates into Angaria. She had led the first portion of the attack with her attention divided. Now her focus became total, and she shouted the final syllables of the summoning at the onrushing light. As the land and southern reaches of her army began to burn with the radiant heat, she finished the spell. She spread her arms wide and lifted her head back, looking up to the sky, then turned to embrace all her army to the north as well. With her gesture, she conjured a vast dome of protection. Blood fought blood, darkness fought light, death fought wrath. The shield sprang into being in front of the beam. It was the red of blood, the black of night, and the white of bone. Blood coursed through dark membranes, stretched between a network of bones, a colossal hemispherical wing, curving to protect the legions from the light of Graunos. The beam hit, and the shield held. Neferata strained, sending her will across the membrane, commanding its strength, creating its strength. She felt the blast of the beam as an immense pressure, a mountain pressing down against the shield. The blood in her veins grew hot, the membranes fluttered, night threatening to tear and let a terrible day through. The weight pushed at her, and she took it upon her shoulders. Nagadron roared as the power applied to his mistress forced him down. Neferata poured all her power and focus into sustaining the shield. The events on the ground below were remote from her. She could have no influence on them. They were enormously far away, yet they registered at the edge of her awareness. The armies were pushing forwards, slowed down as the Bloodbound rallied and counterattacked. She saw the anvils of the Heldenhammer look up at the protection she gave them. And she saw Graunos. He was still some distance away. He had savaged the front ranks of her forces to the north and was heading towards her now. He would not reach her, she thought, before the beam had passed. She hoped. Until she dropped the shield, she could not parry any attack. There was movement on her right, and close, one of the bloodbound of the Horde engaging the anvils of the Heldenhammer had left the conflict. He was vaulting over rubble and climbing higher on the fragments of fallen Velkin, heading her way. There was power in his movements. This was a leader, a warlord, or perhaps one who sought to become one by destroying the great foe. He wielded a huge runic axe. It shone like a fire of brass. He had a single, long, vicious horn on the left side of his head. She had seen similar weapons and horns before. The warrior was an exalted deathbringer. He ran along the top of a massive fragment almost level with her. He would leap, she realized, and he would reach her. There was nothing she could do, and he knew it. He was close enough that she could see his jaws widen in anticipation of the kill. She understood the danger, yet it barely registered. The tiny part of her awareness that was taking in the threat was watching, as if from a great distance, detached, cold, mildly interested. The rest of her protected entire armies from annihilation. There was another shape pursuing the cornate warrior. It closed in, and Neferata saw that it was Scarveth. As the Deathbringer reached the rock's edge, Scarveth threw his sword. It struck the Deathbringer hard enough to knock him off balance. He turned on Scarveth and pounded towards the weaponless Hell Knight, axe raised to destroy. Scarveth ducked and tried to sidestep. He caught a massive blow to the side. It sliced away armor and smashed bone. Scarveth's plate and his cloak caught fire. He kept moving, went past the Deathbringer and recovered his sword just in time to block a second hit. The blow was so powerful, the rock cracked open beneath his feet. The Hell Knight and the Deathbringer dueled. Scarveth was dexterous with the sword, but the Deathbringer had the advantage of speed and power. Neferata did not think Scarveth could win. She could not help him. To her astonishment, she wished she could. Her concentration almost broke, and her grip on the shield slipped. She regained her control and pushed the duel further to the boundaries of awareness. In a few more seconds, she could act if she wished. In a few more seconds, the beam would pass and she could drop the shield. The seconds were eternities. She had never hesitated to sacrifice her subjects when the need arose. There was such a need now, and Scarveth was sacrificing himself for a second time. And she did not want him to. The warriors clashed in the corner of her vision, a blur of violence and flame. She could not look because she could not afford to be distracted. She did not look because she did not want to see Scarveth fall. The pressure ended just as she heard a bellow of triumph from the Deathbringer. The beam was passed. Neferata dropped the shield. The knight and blood and bone vanished, and she turned to fight the Deathbringer. She did not need to. He stood over the prone Scarveth, both hands lifting the axe, his body motionless. Scarveth had stabbed upwards, shoving his blade through the Deathbringer's throat and spine. Neferata astounded herself a second time by discovering that she was relieved. Then she dismissed the thoughts again. Granos was close. "Fly," Neferata told Nagadron. "Flee the demon prince. Give me time, Nagadron. Give me time to finish my work." The dread abyssal shot away from Granos, and Neferata began a new incantation. As they raced the demon prince, she saw another duel further below, and the symmetry of the war pleased her. Kathag and Rassan fell back from each other, battered and bleeding from another flurry of blows. Rassan's armour was gouged open on the chest and arms. Wherever Kathag's axe had struck, it had torn the Sigmarite and drawn blood. She had done him damage too, her hammer cracking open his armour and shattering his helm. Blood coated Kathag's face like a red rag. Around them, the maelstrom of war raged. Stormhost and Warhorde had collided in fury. The battlefield was a mass of huge borders and narrow canyons between towering ruins. It was impossible for any force to move through it in a massed charge. The war had become a swarm of skirmishes. Once the armies met, there was nowhere to advance except beyond the Ring of Glass. There was no objective to take or hold. The only goal was annihilation. Rassan and Kathag circled each other. They were in a small bowl created by heaps of rubble on both sides. Kathag's juggernaut lay on the hill, its head split open and smouldering from a lightning strike.
"And now you are her plaything too," Kathag taunted with a growl.
Rassan did not answer, watching for an opening. Kathag laughed bitterly.
"You don't think you are? I didn't think I was either. I was wrong. Have you considered that it might have been part of her design that I killed your chieftain?"
Rassan was startled. The suspicion was so much like Venthor's, it was almost as if he were speaking through the hulking warrior. Still, she kept her silence. Kathag was trying to tempt her into a mistake. Wrath was his strength, and she would not fight the battle on his terms. And Neferata had tried repeatedly to warn Venthor. The choices he had made were his own. She would not dishonour his memory by thinking otherwise. But the warlord's bitterness troubled her. There was a melancholy there, a fault line running through his anger. Kathag swung his axe back and forth and moved closer, ready to launch into her again.
"Are you telling yourself the same lies I have been?"
he said.
"I am done with them. I have believed them for too long. I thought I had escaped her once. I thought my lord and I would bring her to ruin because we knew what she was and we would not fall to her traps."
He spat.
"We are all her puppets, Relicta. We are her puppets even now."
"To what end?" Rassan asked in spite of herself. The bitter laugh came again.
"Only she knows. And today the ends are ours."
Kathag charged with brutal speed, his axe tearing worlds in reality. Braced for the attack, Rassan stepped into it and blocked the strike. His blow was immense, and the power knocked her aside, as she had expected. She let it, absorbing the worst of the strike with speed as she came around his flank and hit back. Her relic hammer, charged with death and lightning, struck Kathag at the base of the neck. The shock wave of the strike cracked the boulders around them. Kathag's armour flew apart, and he staggered, flesh charring with burns. With a howl of rage, Kathag whipped back at her, inhumanly fast, his axe feeding on his anger. The rent it tore in the air was wide and squirming with disintegrating reality. The unleashed storm disorientated Rassan, and she was too slow to evade the blow. She blocked it, the shock of the impact jarring her spine. The storm grew and more wounds opened. She did not realize Kathag had pulled his axe back until she saw the overhead strike coming in. She blocked again. Lightning exploded from her hammer, striking into the disintegration vortices. The world shook with the eruption of sorcerous power. Kathag pressed down with all his fury, seeking to shatter her weapon and her with it. She pushed back. Lightning fought with sheer destruction. She would not fall. She would avenge Venthor. Kathag pressed harder yet, driven by the anger of despair. The world was cracking around Rassan. Swirling abysses joined together. Soon they would form a chasm large enough to swallow her. Spectral light caged in bones flew overhead. It was Neferata's monster, taking her east towards the Sentinel of the Shroud. Neferata's voice cut through the tempest of the war. The syllables she pronounced were strange and terrible in Rassan's ears. They sounded like a command and a final summoning. As she passed above the duel, and without pausing in her incantation, the Mortark of Blood struck downwards with her staff. Crimson witch light flashed from it and engulfed Kathag's head. The pressure on Rassan vanished, and Kathag stumbled away, clawing at the blood fire. He kept hold of his axe and pulled his own flesh from his head, dousing the flames of the spell. Rassan waited until his vision was clear so he could see her death blow coming for his forehead. She called Sigmar's lightning upon him at the same moment that she crushed his skull. Body smoking and charred, head a splintered concavity, Kathag dropped like a felled tree. He was already dead, but Rassan thought she heard his voice whisper once more in the dissipating energies of his weapon's vortices.
"Fools,"
he sighed.
"All fools."
Nagadron flew higher, Graunos closing in. He would be upon Neferata in a few moments. Let him, because she was done. Neferata turned Nagadron around to meet the demon prince and to look down upon the devastated vista of Mausolea. She spoke the final syllables, completing her work. Below, the armies of the dead and the anvils of the Heldenhammer fought against the legions of Angaria. Neferata's forces had the advantage. Their victory was likely. That was not good enough. She had not come simply to defeat Graunos's ambitions, but to exterminate those who would challenge her rule. She finished speaking, and the dead city answered with a scream of worship. The citizens of Mausolea, killed by the fall of Velkin, obeyed her. The dead in the cemeteries obeyed her. All the souls of all the ages buried within the compass of the burning gaze of Skaldagar Bastion obeyed her. An ocean tide of spirits rose through stone, shrieking in pain and praying to her mercy. All the ground of Mausolea crumbled, and the heaps of rubble moved again as corpses by the hundreds of thousands crawled out from their resting places. No weight of stone could stop them from answering Neferata's call. Graunos paused in his pursuit. He hovered just below Neferata, looking down. A legion dwarfing his at its mightiest climbed up from the depths. It was a deluge that covered the land and drowned his war horde beneath its uncontainable magnitude. "You conquered only the surface of this land," Neferata said. "The foundations have always belonged to me. This is the dominion of bone, and it is mine." Graunos looked up at her, his silver eyes blazing.
"No,"
he said.
"You are wrong. If the land is not mine, then it shall not exist at all."
He flew higher, past Neferata. Skaldagar Bastion was coming back into sight again, and Graunos turned his eyes upon it. He roared, his wrath splintering the night. Tremors shook the Sentinel of the Shroud. The fortress shuddered, and the fissures spread out from its eyes. The corrupted light of Haish radiated through them, cutting into the hood of the mountain. The fissures became wider. The visage of the fortress seemed to change from unconquerable stone to a gossamer web. Neferata leapt from Nagadron and shot through the air at the demon prince. Skaldagger Bastion exploded, and the Sun of Annihilation appeared on the peak of the mountain. The last day, the consuming day, came to Angaria. The fireball spread wider and wider, melting the sentinel, sending a rushing river of glass down its heaving slopes. The Sun of Graunos grew towards the ground. In moments, it had already consumed half the mountain. Neferata flew with Akenseth extended before her. The staff glowed with darkness in answer to the voracious light. Graunos snarled. He took the blast of witchlight full in the chest and swung his axe at the staff. The killing light reached them. A fire spread over Neferata's limbs. Raging agony took her, and the darkness of the night vanished. Graunos was silhouetted before her, and he was burning too. His blow knocked the staff away. Neferata veered off, grimacing with the effort to keep control through the fire and pain. She could barely see. Her sense of direction had disintegrated. All of existence was the ruinous sun and the dark shape of its creator in the center. Neferata called the risen dead to her as she circled Graunos, seeking an opening. The blaze of the sun darkened briefly as thousands of spectres rushed to answer her. Almost at once, they burned away into ethereal ash. The sun incinerated spirit and matter alike. The wraiths could not reach Graunos. In a few moments, they would all be gone, just as all the armies below would vanish too. The wounds of the flames fractured her awareness. Neferata blinked, lost a moment of time, and suddenly Graunos was upon her. She could not avoid his axe. The blow smashed her down. The agony of splintering bones shot through the all-consuming pain of the fire. She dropped and screamed in the fury of will. Her staff burned with its own fire as she channeled spells through it and arrested her fall. She flew back up at Graunos. Neferata burned throughout her being, her flesh, her blood, her heart, her essence. They were all in flame. She did not have much longer. She sent an arcane bolt of blood and night from the blade of the Staff of Pain. The demon shrugged off the blow, as if she had done no more than tap his shoulder. He beat his wings, soaring through the firestorm of his son, and was upon her again, swinging his huge axe with the speed of lightning and with the steady, heavy rhythm of doom. Neferata blocked with Akenseth. She blocked again and again. There was no retreating from Graunos now. He was pressing her too hard, too fast. He was a cyclone of wrath, and she could not strike back. She weakened with every parry. She feigned a greater weakness, but the demon prince snarled at her deception and struck harder yet, turning her lie into a truth. The fire burned into her vision, and she could barely see Graunos. It burned through to her core, and she could barely hold on to her being. Graunos saw her end loom, and he attacked with renewed frenzy. The axe fueled the sun to even greater brilliance with every swing. Graunos battered Neferata. He broke her down. Her parries grew weaker, and seeing how close she was to the end, Graunos gave vent to the fullness of his wrath, determined to finish her off. As Graunos' attacks became more frenzied, he cared nothing for defense. Neferata struck him with Akenseth, and her blow meant less than nothing. The demon rained blows on her with terminal fury. He saw her end. It was within his grasp. There was no lie here, no pretense. She was at her end. Truth is the destroyer. Graunos did not even blink when Neferata slashed at his eyes with Akhmet Ha. The dagger of jet barely touched Graunos, but it severed vision from his eyes. Darkness returned to him. Darkness which had been his curse in Haish, condemning the human he had once been to persecution and exile in the realm of light. Darkness which he had defeated with wrath took him once more. The demon prince howled his denial. He commanded that light return, and the light obeyed. The sun ceased its expansion. The monstrous fire contracted, rushing inside the being that had summoned it. Neferata pulled away from an imploding hurricane of flame, summoning protection with the last of her strength. She let herself fall, dropping from the screaming Graunos. He was held in the air by the forces he had unleashed, and which now rushed back to him with vengeance. The day vanished, and Neferata was in the night once more. She brought her fall to a stop and watched, smiling, as the great fire vanished into the demon prince. He had created the fire, but the light that Khorne had given his eyes was gone forever. He was plunged back into the darkness that had been his torment in Haish. In his horror and anguish, his anger had no direction, no vision. It consumed him, and so too did the flames. His need and his terror could never be answered. They swallowed all of the sun. They swallowed him. Then it was done. Graunos vanished into oblivion. All that remained was a light rain of ash drifting gently down over the melted ruin of the mountainside. Do not seek finality or endings. They are dangerous illusions. Look instead for the threads that emerge from every victory and defeat. They lead to the future. Seize the threads and shape the future. Neferata, Ontology of Time. Epilogue. Neferata found Scarveth where she had last seen him. He was kneeling over the body of the Deathbringer. He had struck his sword into the ground, and he rested his arms on the hilt. Fragments of bone littered the earth. He raised his head when Neferata dismounted from Nagadron, but he could not rise.
"My queen,"
he said. Neferata was glad to see he had not been destroyed by the blows he had taken from the Deathbringer. She was relieved to see the Hell Knight. The experience puzzled her. She would meditate upon it later. For now, she would give aid to her servant. "Rise, Scarveth Lytesian," Neferata said. She whispered a necromantic spell, and at the touch of Aken Seth, the Hell Knight's bones knitted themselves whole once more. "Come with me," she said. "I think it right that the descendants of Mathas Helizan should meet in victory." The dome of the sky was greying with dawn when they approached Rasan. The Lord Relictor was standing on a leaning slab of rock, easily visible for the anvils of the Heldenhammer. The storm host was reforming its ranks after the battle, making ready to march south. Rasan turned to face Neferata. "You are satisfied, I imagine. The rest of Angaria lies open to your reconquest." "Which I see I shall do without your company. This saddens me." The skull-faced helm cocked to one side. "I doubt that. I do not think you are capable of sadness." "Perhaps not."
"Are you not satisfied with this victory?"
Scarveth asked Rasan. "Graunos is defeated. This was why we came to this region of Shaish."
"Oh, I'm sure that is just the beginning, as far as Sigmar is concerned," Neferata said. "Our paths will cross again, Lord Relictor. I am not done with you, and you do not truly wish to be done with me. You have seen me keep my word. I have you now."
"The next time we meet," said Rasan, "it is very likely to be on opposite sides of the battlefield."
"That may well be," Neferata conceded. "Permit me to hope that will not be the case."
I'm sure you're being ironic in asking my permission, Rassan said, and she turned back to the storm host. Neferata looked back and forth between Scarveth and Rassan. The skeleton and the Stormcast Eternal, whose armor bore the iconography of bones. Both warriors from the same family. Their destinies had put realms between them, yet here they were. The intersection of their fates was too unlikely to be a coincidence. Some other power was at work here, Neferata thought. She saw its hand in the presence of the Hell Knight and the Lord Relictor. Who are you? Why do you conjure this mystery? Is this your declaration of challenge? Very well, then. I accept. Come to me. Let us begin the next dance. That was Neferata, The Dominion of Bones, by David Annandale. Read by Emma Gregory. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.